All right, Dave, here we are.
Yeah.
We are exhausted.
It's been a long couple of days.
You know the people who are like, oh my gosh, having a puppy is nothing like having a baby? I don't want to know what having a baby's like.
It's been a lot, yeah.
We got a puppy.
Very cute, very fluffy.
Full of shark teeth.
And poo.
And poo.
Lots of poo.
So much urine.
Yeah.
Like you just, every time you don't look at it, it's peed somewhere.
Yeah, and he's a very small puppy.
Yeah.
So it's hard to distinguish a sit from a crouch and pee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We reek of urine and we're so tired. Yeah. But you know what, guys?
We're soldiering on. We're ready with episode 22 today, Symbiosis. Also, this is a podcast that you're listening to right now through your ears.
What's it called, Dave?
It's called Star Trek.
What do we do?
A Next Generation Rewatch podcast where myself, longtime TNG fan, and my wife, Amara, who's never seen Star Trek for the most part, rewatch old Next Generation episodes and we compare notes.
Yeah, although this time I'm like basically almost done with season one. So What are we going to say for season two?
I guess you're 1/7 of the way in or something like that. You're no longer a naive, you're like Star Trek curious
neophyte?
Maybe? Or
I don't know.
Neophyte? Yeah. We'll come up with something. Oh, you might have one little pip on your shoulder, on your shirt.
Yay! Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah. So today we are talking about Symbiosis, which is the 22nd episode. This episode originally aired on April 18th, 1988. It was written by Robert Lewin and Hans Bremler. Hans Bremler actually was a frequent writer on Deep Space Nine, which will be another podcast I'm sure we'll want to do.
Wait, what?
No, yeah, for sure.
Oh, no, I'm busy that year. I'm assuming that'll take years to get to.
And it was directed by Wynn Phelps. So, actually, I had literally no memory of this episode. Like, you know, watching it again was almost like watching it for the first time because I don't remember much of this except for one scene.
Okay.
Yeah. So did you have any general thoughts about this
piece of art
before we dive in? I thought it was...
Well, first off, my name for this episode was Sackler's Gone Crazy.
Okay.
And it was like the Sackler Planet. Yes, in keeping with the opioid crisis.
Oh, interesting.
And the Sackler family.
I think I can see where you're going with this. Interesting take. Okay. I like this alternative Star Trek universe you're building.
Yeah, my alternative Star Trek universe makes sense, unlike a lot of the stuff
or
in the...
Or perhaps uncovering, then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, and also, there was like the more you know moments in the episode about drugs.
So heavy-handed.
And I was like, wait a second. And I did look it up, and this did come out during the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
And I was like, did the Reagan White House sponsor this episode? Questions.
We'll get to it, but that was put in over the objection of the cast. They did not want to have that in there.
Yeah, it actually made me want to go find marijuana. Like, I felt so uncool watching it that I was like, what's something I don't normally imbibe that's like kind of
let me just
sort
break
of taboo?
Yeah.
I'm going to go find some pots.
Yeah.
Get me some weed.
Yeah.
Some Lady J.
Some Lady J? I don't think anyone's
Dave,
ever.
Dave, you know I haven't really gone
so
down
cool.
the pot needle
it's just
train.
So cool.
The point is, it made me want to find a pot needle.
Yeah. I would see the same thing if I was a kid watching this. It was like, this is stupid. I'm going to. Yeah.
Like, I'm definitely going to take a lot of drugs when I'm older.
Yeah, yeah.
To not be like Wesley. Okay, anyway, we'll get to it.
So, so we'll open up this episode with a slightly different thing where Picard is doing a ship-wide announcement.
And we get to see people in different parts of the ship, like kind of like their daily operations as they're going about on Enterprise. And I noticed there's a fellow in engineering who had a really comfortable-looking jumpsuit. And it made me really happy.
Oh.
Yeah, like just a one-piece regular jumpsuit that's loose. None of the spandex crap. And
that's
I was like,
really
good
cool.
for you, buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know what position he holds, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The very beginning. Yeah, I think that's more like the utilitarian uniform, where it's like all golden with a little black collar.
But it's not spandex.
It's not spandex.
It's far more breathable.
Yeah, that looks like a pretty sweet uniform.
Yeah, I don't know why everyone's not wearing that.
I would have thought those would be perfect for the security people, too.
I think it's better than the regular uniforms for everyone. Anyway.
So Picard is telling us all that they're on this mission to investigate, I think it was a star in the Delos system or Delos system. And this star is undergoing unusual, like fast magnetic field fluctuations or changes or oscillations. And they're going in there to study it real close because they like to study things real close.
With no
stars.
Regard for science. At all.
What do you mean, no regard for science?
Magnetic fields.
Yeah.
And they operate with a system of like magnetic field.
They get close. And I guess the magnetic field oscillations of the star as they approach really start to disrupt a lot of their systems, right?
And so they're a little too startled, Dave, yeah. for people who supposedly know about ships.
You know, that's a great point, because you can easily do those calculations, yes. right? And figure out how disrupt, yeah.
What are they teaching in Starfleet?
So they have to do, well, they're talking about, really, I think what they're teaching in Starfleet is how to do the Prime Directive, which we'll talk about.
I think it's how to stand with like an unearned confidence and look like sharp. Mm. Or like to give direction, mm-hmm. like in the last episode where we saw LeVar, you know, kind of reaffirm the two babies on the bridge by making them look at his butt. Like he stands directly in front of them and they teach that.
They just do clenching exercises.
They're like, yes.
Let's just keep firming it up and
they're
tightening.
They're like, hey, you might not know what's going on or understand basic like physics or aerodynamics or anything to do with engineering.
Yeah.
But as long as that tush is tight, people will respect you.
As long as you're keeping it tight. In which case, then the spandex makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually,
it's really.
But yeah, so another point where they're going around, so they show like, you know, the different areas. Yeah. I noticed that there's Dr. Crusher.
Yeah.
And she's tending to a guy on a table.
Yeah.
He looks miserable. And I did come up with a fictional backstory to this. That guy's name is Jeb. Jeb just wanted a day off work, all right?
So he called in sick?
No.
Okay.
So Jeb's like, how do I do this? Mm-hmm. Ah, you know, he's like, aha, if I go to Crusher, she can't tell the chief of engineering, let's say he's from engineering, programming, what it is that I'm suffering from. So he goes to Crusher and he's just like, I have menstrual cramps. And since Crusher's a terrible doctor, she's like, that checks out. Humans get menstrual cramps.
Actually, about half of all humans do get menstrual cramps.
It's so true. Yeah. So this guy's just like, yeah, and he's just snoozing in the med bay.
So as we go around the ship, we learn from Picard and I guess from Mars' supposition that people are taking time off. But they're going to investigate this sun, as I mentioned. And because of these unusual magnetic electrical fluctuations, they've got to jack up the shields real high, but they also put everyone on yellow alert. Right, so they'll be ready to deal with whatever comes their way. And right as he says this, as I mentioned in the beginning, I haven't really seen this one in a long time. I think I've maybe seen it once or twice. Don't remember what was going on exactly. And as soon as he starts saying stuff like, we're having all these power fluctuations, you know, immediately I'm thinking, there's a 50-50 chance this is going to be a holodeck. Like we get trapped in the holodeck and something goes awry. You know, that's kind of what it was. But that was not the case. So Data gives us a little bit more context from the bridge, and he mentions that, you know, they're going to bring a bunch of power to the shields so that the Enterprise can start moving closer towards the star to observe these solar fluctuations, these solar flares, which is what they really want to be observing. And as they get closer, they see this really cool large solar flare and they're both like, wow, that's really cool. Like,
that's right, beautiful, impressive.
Yeah.
And also, they have the best device ever because the idea of sunglasses for a ship is just laughable in the 80s.
Yeah.
They decide a giant black circle.
Yes. They just block out.
Yes. So so all of a sudden, like they've got their like windshield for lack of a better term. They have like a bloop, like
block.
Another black dot that's blocking out the sun.
Yeah. Which I guess the concept of saturating pixels has not occurred to the people that were writing about the view screen.
Or again, sunglasses.
Yeah.
No one can have sunglasses.
There's no sunglasses in the future.
Yeah, but I was like, whoa, it's like the eclipse from a couple years ago.
taking
me back.
So as they get closer and closer and they observe these solar flares, suddenly we have Wes on the bridge at one of the science stations at the back, like one of the stations behind Worf.
Mm-hmm.
And he's complaining about these large bursts of x-rays that are like off the scale and like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this x-ray burst hits the ship and his console starts crackling blue, like electricity sparking all over it. And it's like going weird and non-responsive.
Yeah.
And when I saw that crackling blue thing, though, I don't know, as you watch Star Trek over time, certain patterns get associated with certain things.
Yeah.
And that pattern seemed more to me like an alien possession kind of a pattern.
That was, from a previous episode, the malfunctioning Apple Pen.
Yeah. And it wasn't so much an electrical outage.
Yeah.
Because electrical outages are usually blinking on and off, not this kind of, so.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was ship possession at first, too. And I was like, is this the same, like, electrical field that created the new Picard that we're all just like, sure, it's the same guy after
and also,
an hour?
The episode is called Symbiosis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so you're really getting your first pip here. You're earning your Star Trek wings because you're thinking along the same. Nice.
Well, yeah, not only that, but I also wanted to note that there's this kid next to Wesley on the bridge who looks the same age. And I've mentioned this kid before. Like, I've been like, that guy looks the same age as Wesley.
Yeah.
And so he's like, he's got a Starfleet uniform on.
Yeah.
So presumably he's gone through Starfleet already, mm-hmm. and he's already on like the bridge, which means he must be reasonably good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Wesley like science explains to this guy that like, there's a ton of electricity and the console's overloaded. And the guy's just like, yes.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, intern. Thanks, Wes.
Keep yeah, wearing your sweater.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that yet again, there just seems to be this guy who's like the same age. And you mentioned previously, you thought maybe he's an alien race who just looks younger.
A Benjamin Button situation, yeah.
I don't think that's it, Dave. I really just think that Wesley's not the wunderkind that Star Trek is making him out to be. So, yeah, anyway, they're all very surprised that the sun is in a magnetic race.
Yeah, it's like shooting
interfering
out
with computers. And yeah. I'm like, so they don't have computers and magnets? Like, and they've never tried playing with them together?
So they do wind up pushing a whole bunch of power to the shields to like offset these effects.
Mm-hmm.
And they move closer and closer and closer. But as they get closer in to like start taking some readings or whatever and measure this phenomenon and do their sciencing, they get a distress call.
Yeah. Okay, one thing before we get to this, though.
Yeah.
So I thought there were dedicated science ships. Yet another point where I was like, what the hell?
What are
they doing?
Yeah, they're kind of like a catch-all, like we can do anything kind of ship. Like they can do battleship if they want. They can do diplomacy. They can do sciencing.
So you're saying like they're the veterinarians of the medical world?
We could go there, yeah.
Okay, that makes them pretty badass, though.
Yeah, or just the handyman of the space world.
Also badass.
Yeah.
Respect, okay.
Yeah.
And then also, mm-hmm. follow-up question. Will Data start twitching out at some point?
Oh, that's a great question.
But yeah. Yes, anyways, that's not where this plot goes. I thought that was going to happen.
Oh, I didn't think about that. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's like magnets don't bother him, which is practical, I suppose.
No, they should. I think like he should be affected just like other electrical systems, but he maybe has different shielding. I'm sure there's some way the writers got around that.
Or didn't they just think forgot. About it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
So they hear this distress call as they get closer to the star. And Picard is like, you know, being Picard, like, we got to investigate, right? There's like people in distress and we're all about helping people. So he breaks off their scientific mission to go pick up or go investigate the distress call, right? They can't really hear it very well. So they go like warping over to the distress call to see what the deal is. And it turns out it's a freighter captain. It's a small freighter vessel. And the captain is like trying to respond to them via Zoom or via view screen or whatever. But the message is very garbled and it's very difficult to understand what the captain to John is saying.
It's to like
to John. Yeah,
okay,
like T apostrophe John.
Yeah,
you know, yeah,
okay, I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was short for like the John.
Oh, like, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, as the Enterprise approaches, they do more scans and scan, and they find there's six life forms aboard this tiny little freighter. And the freighter is, the orbit is degenerating, right? So it's going to crash into one of these planets and kerplode.
And okay, Riker, this entire episode, he maybe has like three lines.
Yeah.
He's really like a...
Low on Riker.
I was appreciating after the last episode where he seemed to not care that his Starfleet possible dorm mate died along with an entire ship full of people. And I'm like, okay, Riker's just taking like a mental health day, I guess, and sitting this one out. But he's like super suspicious of this distress signal for like no reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you all of a sudden like Mr. Suspicious? Like you just made people go down to an armament planet that had like AI that wanted to kill you.
Maybe that's why he's like now like, we should be careful where we beam over to.
I guess, but I was like, where's this coming from?
There may be consequences to our actions.
There's this like fantastic sequence where they're trying to communicate with this ship, right?
Oh, I love that.
Trying to like establish a decent video feed.
Yeah.
And at 6:50 in this episode, this is after the opening credits.
Yeah.
That was like a frustration that I feel like every person in the modern world has dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
That was like way ahead of its time. Like Star Trek was way ahead of its time. And they somehow managed to predict this because when you can't get a visual feed, when you're trying to like video chat with someone, it is so unbelievably frustrating and like you get amped up for no reason. Like, I can't tell you how many times Dave and I like tried to video chat when he's at PetSmart because we get like certain brands for our dogs for their kibble and like certain ones that are like, oh, joint and hip supplement ones.
Yeah.
And he'll like, you know, he'll be like, I don't remember which one it is. And I'll be like, just, you know, send me a video. Like, let's just video chat me. And then it'll start breaking up and it'll be like, it's the gold one. It's the gold one. And you'll be like, what? What? And I'm like, argh! So I thought that was way ahead of its time and way to go Star Trek to predict that that would make everyone frustrated.
Yeah.
It does when they can't communicate with this vessel.
I really enjoyed this communication sequence because we'll talk about it now. As Picard starts talking to T'Jon, this guy has no idea what he's talking about.
Right. Okay. I couldn't tell if he was like high or if he like they just give it up and they're like, oh, we're going to die soon. And they just were getting into the ethanol on board.
It kind of actually reminded me a lot of Idiocracy.
Me too. I have that too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So like I this is my note. Okay. So suddenly I'm starting to understand why Starfleet is regarded so highly in this fictional universe. If these are the other pilots out there, they're a step away from feeding their plants electrolytes.
Yeah.
It's what Picard's, the plants need.
That's amazing. Yeah. Like, as he's talking to the guy, the T'Jon is like, yeah, things are broken. Like, it's all dead, I guess.
But, like, totally unemotional. Like, seriously. I'm like, are you guys high?
And Picard asks him, like, well, what is your main computer saying? Is the computer's not working very well? And you can see Picard and Riker are like, what the hell? They're getting very frustrated by this guy. But I do feel like to your point, this would probably be like 90% of the people you meet in space.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. So it's like Starfleet is existing in an Idiocracy universe.
Yeah. I mean, that's not really the case in the show, but that'd be my guess if we were to be in the future. Like, and technology is so automated, people wouldn't know how to.
Yeah, but like the lack of just like concern about imminent death was just surprising, which again, I thought, okay, they must be high. This is going to be an episode about like, oh, they've got some sort of sickness that makes them high or they're drugged out or something.
Yeah.
Because that was really weird.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. Picard tells them like the ship figures out what the freighter's problem is. And they said, we can beam you over this coil and then just replace it. And we'll beam you over the part. And the guy's like, okay. You have to install it though. Oh, right. Do you need help with that? Yeah.
No one knows how to do that.
Yeah.
You could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they do try to do a tractor beam to like grab the freighter, but the solar interference gets in the way of all that.
And so they're like, oh, you know, their ship's going to crash. And this, since they don't know how to install this like energy coil or whatever the hell it is, well, you got to beam them over. And I'm like, is this a good idea?
Yeah.
If there's magnetic fields of fluctuating and, you know, Wesley's like, oh my God, electricity on the console. And the guy next to him's like, shut up. I didn't go to Starfleet Academy for like 9 years for that reason. Don't science explain my job to me. Then is it a good idea to bring people over? And I thought this was going to go like a dark direction where it's like people got fused together.
Ooh, interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Or like the wrong heads were fixed to bodies. And I was like, oh.
Like a Fly kind of situation.
Like a Cronenberg, yeah. But it didn't.
Nope.
But that would have made sense.
So Riker volunteers basically right away to go over there and like install the control coil or whatever it is and fix it, right? And he's going to bring over Tasha. And they head over to the transporter room to start beaming over. But I guess on the way there, they're like, realize this is a really stupid idea.
Yeah, and Yara's like the only one not freaking out about all the science malfunction stuff. She's like, all right, we just gotta like figure out how to get them over here. Because, you know, Riker and Picard are like, my stars, how can they not know about all this science? How can they be pilots? And it's like, save your incredulity, people are dying.
I can't, like, this is really frustrating to me rewatching this because there's so many times where it's like they want to generate the time pressure and they're super chill.
Yeah. And then also, I have another note. Maybe this Captain T'Jon, who's like being super unhelpful and just like doesn't seem to know anything, is quiet quitting. I read about it in the New York Times.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. It's like, I'm not getting paid enough for this.
He's just like, I don't know how to install a coil. Do I look like an engineer?
In my job description.
Yeah. It wasn't on Indeed.
Yeah.
Also, the salary wasn't posted. It turns out you all lowballed me. Quiet captaining here.
Nice. I like that. And well, Picard and Riker do ask him how long he's been captain, and he says like 7 years. Tasha and Riker go over to the transporter bay to beam over and try to fix the whole situation, but they run out of time, presumably because they're walking through the ship to go to the transporter pad. Right?
Yeah, and Riker's just bitching about how stupid these people are, and it's like, Riker? Riker. And you fell for an AI woman.
Yeah, you were trapped in an AI woman while your ship was stolen.
So, like,
don't be throwing any stones.
Yeah. You're beautiful. Keep those lips quiet. Yeah. Just look pretty for this episode. Yeah,
just purse those lips.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
purse those lips and thrust those hips. Nice.
Yar can't get a lock, so she can't really beam them over successfully. And so instead, Yar decides, what if we link the two transporters together in series, kind of use their joint power to beam us over more safely? And so she talks to John through how to do this, because again, he doesn't seem to know or doesn't really get it. And then they ask to John, like, get all the people onto your transporter pad and we'll beam them all off. And Riker's like, no, no, no. Let's just beam them where they are. That's one more element we don't need to get them to. So they try to beam off all the people. Mm-hmm. But instead, they wind up beaming away a bunch of cargo.
Yeah. So on the transporter pad, instead of putting people, they put cargo and they're like, we're ready to beam.
Yeah.
And so Tasha's like, all right. Yeah. Getting this ready. And then all of a sudden this like cargo shows up.
Yeah.
And she's like, God damn it, these people.
Which I got to think from a transporter point of view, it's got to look different when you're like beaming stuff up, like people versus cargo, right? I'm sure you can tell when you're energizing.
I don't know, Dave. And again, I was like, is this to keep the party going? Because they all seem drunk on the other ship.
Nice. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this must be their ethanol.
It's okay. Just a bunch of poly water.
Yeah. They're just like, this is enough poly water for everyone. Yeah.
So they beam over these like seven cargo silos or whatever. And then Riker's like, okay, this is ridiculous. Let's just beam those people off. But it's like getting to a crunch point because the ship is disintegrating. It's about to explode and blah, blah, blah. And they energize and, suspenseful moment, they get 4 out of the 6 people. So they lose 2 of them.
Right? And they're totally blasé about it.
Again, death has no consequence
in
this universe.
Well, at this moment in this episode, it's very strange.
Yeah, they're just totally fine.
Wildly inconsistent this episode.
Yeah. But they do manage to get 4 of the people over.
And one of them I have a serious problem with.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Which one's that?
Well, Dave, has to do with his costume.
Oh, boy.
His overalls are fantastic. And they are a great part of any sort of ensemble, especially when you're working. You know, you can get dirt in your overalls. You can take them off real fast, especially if you've got, like, leggings underneath. Fantastic. Love overalls. Practical.
Absolutely.
This idiot has sewed fake overalls. So, like,
really,
it's just, yeah, one of these idiots has, like, these overall straps that are sewn to his shirt and no practical overall effect. So, it's, like, fake overalls, and it really bothered me a lot. Like, overalls.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Not, like, the coolest, hippest fashion look, but fake overalls?
That's, like, overalls.
That's disgusting.
Without the utility?
Yeah, it reminds me of when they had nude-colored jeggings, and it's like, no, from a distance.
That's kind of like drawing a fanny pack on you.
Yes,
yeah.
There's no utility to it, and I hated it. So I hated that guy immediately. Not a single pocket anywhere, Dave. What? Why?
Yeah, I feel like you'd really want pockets in space, like as a freighter captain or whatever.
Yes, I feel like you'd also want intelligence, but that's running low.
Okay, so they beam these 4 people over, and immediately when they beam over, there's like 2 pairs, right?
Yeah.
And it's 2 of them are dressed very shiny. They've got very nice hair.
Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, Siegfried and Roy, absolutely. Yes. And the other 2 look like they're space farmers, right? Like they've got the overalls.
Wannabe space farmers.
With the semi overalls and just kind of look kind of shabby. And when I saw this, my first thought was like, this is Eagleton versus Pawnee.
Yes!
Right? Yes, it's just the Eagleton people with their shiny, like, white blonde hair,
yes,
and then the farmers from Pawnee, right? Yeah. With their apparently fake overalls.
Who got, like, knockoff overalls because they can't afford the real overalls.
Like, saving up to buy the real overalls.
Yeah.
So we got the 4 people back on board, and that's all good. And they immediately ask to go see the cargo, I think, right? Like, let's go secure it, right? Which, in a way, kind of makes sense. If this thing is so valuable, you're going to put it on your transporter pad before the humans. You probably want to be sure it's okay. So they get to the cargo bay and they see these beautiful 7 pods and they start looking at them and inspecting them. But it looks like there's some dispute over the ownership, right? So there's these two, it turns out these people are from 2 planets, right? Mm-hmm. I think
Eagleton planet and the Pawnee planet.
The Eagleton, yes. We'll just call it that because the rest doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So the Pawnee people are like, these cargo pads are ours. Or these pads are ours. The Eagleton people say, no, no, no. We didn't get your payment. We didn't get your shipment of goods or whatever. So these technically belong to us because you haven't paid. And then the Pawnees are like, no, 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 we need this. It turns out it's medicine. that they need for their planet because their planet is undergoing this plague.
Right.
So they start arguing about it.
Right? Yes. And Siegfried and Roy are just like, this is ridiculous. Yes. And they don't care about plagues, clearly. They just care about money. And then the Pawnee citizens are like, we're dying. Yeah. But yeah, so it's very clear that there's like, ethically, morally, they're on different pages.
Yeah.
And then also just over who paid for what. And then it's revealed, I don't know if you guys all watch The Boys, you should if you haven't already, they all have starlight powers, which are zappy things from their hands.
So they immediately break into this, or after they argue for a bit, they get into a fight, and I guess they each can zap each other with electricity?
Yeah,
so
zappy
like,
hands.
One of the Pawnee dudes grabs the Eagleton guy and zaps him, and Eagleton zaps him right back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other Pawnee guy goes to attack the Eagleton woman, but she grabs his arm and just zaps it.
Yeah.
And then Tasha and Riker, who are watching this, are all like, what the hell? You can zap people? Like, that's nuts.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool because they just grab each other. Mm-hmm. And then you have this like glowing yellow light appear where they're grabbing.
Yeah.
And like arcing electricity. Zappy, zappy, zappy. So yeah, they start having this electricity fight. Like basically everyone is an electric eel that's just zapping each other, right? And so Tasha's like, no, no, no. She takes out her phaser and then she phasers like the two dudes. And then she says, I think something like, gentlemen, behave yourselves.
Right. And I have right here, okay, Yar is seriously doing everyone's job. Yeah. Riker is like furniture at this point. Yar is breaking up fights, giving orders, telling them to behave. And Riker's just like, I'm here.
Just let me know when you need that gesture.
Is Riker drunk? Question mark.
He's just scowling, actually. You know, that's fine. That was great. We're just watching this again while we do this. And like, Riker's just scowling. And he looks for all the world like Tucker Carlson scowling. Just, furrow brow.
I'm telling you, he got just totally wasted after that last episode.
Yeah.
When his doormate died and he had to talk with the AI salesman.
Yeah, he's kind of phoning it in this one.
He's just phoning it in. He's like, yeah, I can take the lead.
So the security arrives and they escort the electric eel people to this conference room, right? So they're going to chill out there and then negotiate the actual ownership of these cargo pods, right?
Right. And so, yeah, at this point, we know that, like, there's some sort of plague or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and my first thought was, well, did they screen these people before they beamed them aboard for this goddamn plague? Or is this another space Ebola situation?
Yeah, they didn't do that at all. Well, okay, so a little bit of background, I guess, as I remember, it hasn't been made clear yet.
Yeah.
But in the Star Trek technical manual, I believe the transporters do have like biofilters.
They mention, yeah, Crusher mentions that breaking down possibly because of the magnetic field. And I'm like, you know what? Once again, can you guys just like freaking have fail safes for your jobs?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, maybe a nice plastic tent. Yeah. Am I so asking fancy? Too much?
Yeah.
But yeah, instead they're just like, ah, Cavalier. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And as we learn, I think a little bit later, or maybe already have, they haven't made contact with these people in like 200 years. So they have no idea what their deal is.
Yeah. And how are they not spreading like, I don't know, measles or something?
Yeah, we know about this from like, you know, contact between Europe and Native Americans.
Yes.
Like, that's not great.
That's what I'm saying. Like smallpox, measles. Oh my gosh. So many things.
Although I guess maybe because they are technically different species, there's less transmission, but yeah.
Disagree.
Amara just pointed at me in a very theatrical fashion.
Zoonotic illnesses. Well,
they,
bam!
They could be zoonotic, absolutely.
I.e., everyone watch Outbreak and have a healthy fear of monkeys.
But in that case, I mean, because monkeys and humans are pretty closely related, like presumably the DNA between these species is very
okay,
different.
Fine, Dave. Okay. Rabies. Rabies.
Same problem.
Any mammal can infect a human with rabies. Okay, we don't know if these people are mammals because they've got electrical eel people. That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. The point is, though, we don't know, and we also don't know, because maybe there's space Ebola that kills everything organic.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, right? I'm not saying they're doing a good job. We absolutely should have more biofilters in place and just a big plastic tent, like you're saying.
Yeah. If nothing else.
So on the bridge, we get this brief scene between Riker and Tasha as they're walking away from their encounter at the cargo bay. And Tasha's like, yeah, if they're electrical, it's a hard weapon to confiscate. In person, if they're just like a walking battery, not really sure how we're going to defend ourselves against that or deal with it.
That's the last time it's mentioned.
So now we flash onto the bridge where we learn, as I think we mentioned this already, we go onto the bridge where we learn that it's been about 200 years since anyone has made contact with these visitors, right? And it turns out there's two worlds, there's Pawnee and there's Eagleton. And one of them, I think, was on the verge of star travel. I think it was actually Pawnee.
Yeah.
Was on the verge of star travel. And we'll get more backstory about this later. Now, in the conference room, we get a few more details. So we're in the conference room with the Eagleton and Pawnee people.
And Siegfried and Roy, and then fake overalls into John.
Nice. and Picard and them come in, and we learn that the cargo is medicine. It's needed for a plague on the Pawnee planet to stave off this plague. But on the Richie Rich planet, on the Eagleton planet, this stuff is apparently super hard to make. It's called Pelesium. And like it's made in very remote areas and like has to be properly curated and produced. So it takes a good amount of resources for them to make it. And they can't just give it away for free. Right.
Right. So I was like, holy crap, we found the space sacklers. Holy crap. And I'm like, this must be like a distant branch from the original ones, like a super distant branch.
Yeah.
And they're like Beverly Crusher's like 48th cousins or something. And she's like, oh shit, I saw them at the reunion a couple years ago.
Nice.
Okay. Gotta play it cool with this one and, you know, be really vocal against them. But yeah, space sacklers. Siegfried and Roy are space sacklers.
And we also, at this point, like as we're having this conference room conversation, Picard is like, whoa, plague? You guys didn't say you had a plague. Did you just bring a plague on board? Like this might be a medical emergency. And he kind of aborts the conference to figure out if the farmers, if the Pawnee people are contagious.
Right. And the way they're acting, it reminds me of people during the pandemic when they're like, oh yeah, no, I'm fine. Yeah. No, I don't have COVID. I don't have COVID. It's just a cold. And it's like, how do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get this so often at work from random people like, I'll take the test, but I don't think it'll be positive. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny because all of a sudden they're like, oh no, we're worried about quarantine procedure. And it's like, oh God, guys. All right. Just don't feed the plants electrolytes. So then I was like, oh, okay. So this wasn't an issue then.
Yeah.
Like of like some bad ethanol. Because these plague dudes are starting to look like a little withdrawy and like shaky and stuff. And I was like, uh-oh, maybe they botched their like moonshine operation on their ship. And they're starting to like, you know, feel the effects of it. But no, it turns out they need this medication.
Mm-hmm. They do seem a little twitchy during this conference.
Yeah, they got the twitchies.
Twitchies, yeah. So immediately as Picard realizes there's a plague situation, we all move everything over to the medical bay to make sure that this plague is not contaminating people or like infectious or whatever. So now we flash over our viewpoint to medical bay. And Crusher, I believe she reports that she can't find any disease in particular.
No, Dave. First, she scans fake overalls with a keychain flashlight.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, ah, oh, I am pretending to do medicine. Ah, it seems like there's nothing I have that would work. So maybe they should take the medicine they take.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she's good.
She's very stumped. She's like, I don't know. They've got all this stuff, but no disease. It's strange.
Yeah, so she does say, like, I can see their symptoms. Like, there's no doubt they have symptoms, but I can't find the underlying cause.
Yes.
Which, okay.
and again, we're all less like, okay. At least I was like, oh, yeah. And the guy with the period cramps in the back is like, oh, I need to fake a cramp right now.
Yeah. I'm going to take notes on these symptoms. This is getting extra time off. This is great.
Yeah.
But Crusher does say the others, the Eagletons, are in perfect health.
So at this point, this seems like pretty cut and dry as far as ethics go to me. I was just like, as far as the debate of who the medicine should go to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you got a plague planet and then you've got the one percenter planet.
Yeah.
It's like Siegfried and Roy can maybe not have their, you know, bi-monthly matching hair done and maybe save a little on their fancy zippy holographic outfits.
Yeah.
Maybe that wouldn't kill them, but I don't know. Maybe Eagleton's mean.
No, I mean, for sure, like, if it's a plague medicine, but I think Picard has to deal with the fact, like, for him, I think the debate is, I'm not the person that gets to make this decision.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah.
I just get to, you know, as a viewer, just like, oh, the obvious choice is to let these people have the medicine. They seem impoverished.
Yeah.
And you've got these annoying people who are, like, clearly one percenters. And I wrote that they probably say things at parties like, oh, we managed to dodge taxes this year by donating to our own charity, and we have several off-planet accounts. One in Grand Cayman Planet.
Yeah, so Picard goes to talk to the Pawnee people, the Onarans, the farmer dudes, right? Mm-hmm. And they tell it, they're desperate for medicine. Like, they're really kind of twitching out right now. They're in rough shape. They got the shakes and like, it's not looking good for them.
So at this point, what did you think was going on?
At this point, it was kind of becoming, they're hemming it up, right?
I thought it was withdrawal symptoms too. Oh, shiz, it's withdrawal.
Yeah, it does seem pretty clear at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the whole Crusher thing where she can't find any particular symptom.
Oh, that wasn't helpful to me because I don't trust Crusher.
And so then Picard goes to talk to the Breccians or the Eagleton people, excuse me, about actually giving them some medicine. So he goes into their quarters to discuss with the Eagleton people about just giving some medicine to the Pawnee people just for their immediate use, right? So just two doses, mm-hmm. just let's give it to the farmers so they can negotiate this thing because they're like sketching out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagleton people agree to this. They're like, all right, that's cool. We'll let you give two doses, but we want to be there when you open up the cargo,
mm-hmm.
right? So now we all go over to the cargo bay. Let's all go to the cargo bay and open up the medicine chest.
Yes. And there's pills upon pills upon pills.
What, honest to God, to me, looks like a whole bunch of lentils.
Oh, it definitely was the pill route.
It looks like a ton of lentils, like these little orange pills, right?
Yeah.
And they take like two doses and they drop it in this fancy like contraption to like combustulate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they've got these two doses ready to give to the Pawnee people to get them over their hump. Right?
And they're hella concentrated pills, what we find out.
They're super duper concentrated.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's like 4 billion doses.
Yeah. And Data tells us there's like 4,325,000,000. And Picard's like, okay, Data, that's
enough, okay. Data. Yeah.
So Crusher, Data, and Picard are talking to these Breccians. And the Breccians, the Eagleton people say that the Felicium, this drug, works never more than 72 hours, but it provides complete relief to the symptoms of the plague. People feel better. But then 3 days later, they need something else, right? And there's some variability person to person, whatever. But it also takes a huge amount of effort for them to make this stuff, mm-hmm. right? And in fact, their whole planet basically is geared to the production of this one thing.
Right.
And they over the years, they have perfected their process to be more and more enriched and streamlined and get more of the precious Felicium out of whatever plant it is that they're making it from.
Right. And then Crusher says, like, one of her stupidest lines ever.
Ooh.
Where she's just like, oh, I've never heard of a disease that like will be temporarily cured, but then gets worse. And it's like, Crusher. Okay. I don't even know where to start with this. Like, since the dawn of time, man has faced illnesses that can take decades to kill you.
Yeah.
And you do feel better at some points when your body's successfully fighting off infection.
Yeah.
And other times you don't. For example, syphilis.
Or MS. Yeah.
MS.
Yeah.
More modern? AIDS. You take AZT, that gives you a bit of a break.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's just like, Crusher, what the hell are you talking about?
I guess it would be rare to have a clock like 72 hours, but...
But not really, though. Yeah. That's not true, because like I know from the musical Rent that in the 90s, you did take AZT on a clock-like schedule. There's like literally a song where there's like a timer that goes off for one of the characters, and she's like, AZT break.
So how many minutes are in a year?
525,600 minutes.
So yes, we learn that the Breccians or the what are they called?
The Eagletons.
The Eagletons have no other industry, just making Felicium, as we said. And at this point, Crusher's starting to get suspicious.
Right. And so I wrote in all caps, I too was suspicious.
Yeah.
Wait, what if it's just like opioids and they really are the space sacklers and everyone's just going through withdrawal all caps?
No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like Crusher's just like, you're feeling better after they ingest like the next, you know, amount of medication that they need to keep jonesing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, look at her, a doctor of observing things.
Yeah.
Obvious things.
So we do see after the cargo bay scene, the Eagletons prepare the doses and they give them to the Pawnee people. The Pawnee people like do it very urgently, injecting themselves, and they immediately feel like,
They're like Law and Order actors who are like, when it's like, this guy's a meth addict. He's like, sure, I need my meth. And shaking wildly and stuff. And you're like, that's a bit excessive acting, but it's like that.
Yeah, it's over the top.
They're jonesing for the rush.
Crusher, after seeing this, witnessing them dose themselves, she goes to Picard and tells him flat out, look, this Felicium stuff, it's a narcotic, right? This is not a plague medicine. It's a full-on drug.
Right? Yeah, and it's just like she only figured it out, not because she's intelligent, but because this is her family's playbook, Dave. Right? Yeah.
I grew up seeing this stuff.
Exactly. She's just like, this is part of her family history, god damn it.
If anyone knows narcotics, it's...
She's like part of a branch. She's like part of the mainline Sackler family, okay?
Yeah.
This is family history for her.
It's Beverly Crusher Sackler. When we return from commercial break, we're back on the bridge, and here Data is like the master of exposition. He's going to lay out all the history that he's found. So it looks like until about 200 years ago, the Onarans, who are the Pawnees, were the technically advanced people, right, between the two planets.
Mm-hmm.
But something happened. The Pawnee people, the Onarans, were hit by a plague that really devastated their planet. But it looked like the other people, the Eagletons, actually miraculously or just fortunately had this plant that they were able to use to synthesize Felicium, and that would cure the plague, right? And that was able to restore the balance. But it looks like the plant can only grow on the Eagleton planet,
mm-hmm. right? So
they resisted all all efforts to transplant it. And so over time, the Eagleton people just became really, really good at making this plant.
Which actually mimics the real-life fictional history of Eagleton and Pawnee.
Really?
The Eagleton people decided they were once part of Pawnee, and they broke away and yeah. took all the wealth with them, leaving Pawnee to be penniless.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Sad.
Oh, that's really funny. Crusher tells, you know, Data and Riker and Wesley that this thing is a narcotic. But Picard is kind of, his hands are tied for a little bit, right? Because of the Prime Directive. He can't really just give this narcotic to the farmers, nor can he just interdict and like prevent this essentially drug deal from continuing, right?
The Prime Selective Directive.
Wow. Because he's selectively... How have you been hanging on to that?
I literally just came up with it right now.
That is pretty great.
Thank you. I will definitely write that down and use it again.
Prime Selective Directive.
Because he is so inconsistent with this bad boy.
Yeah.
But this time he's like, oh, I've never deviated.
It's this battle
all
I
over
feel
the place.
Between like who the kind of quote unquote real Picard is and just giving the writers like time to figure out the character. You know? But if we take it at face value, yeah, he's very inconsistent in the first year of the show.
So Crusher's like just really hardcore social justicing this episode.
Yeah.
She's just like going in hard with her pitch, just like, you know, and it's kind of like I said at the very beginning of the episode, the lady doth protest too much.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, you know what? You might want to dial it back a little bit. You graduated from the Sackler School of Totally Real Doctrine and stuff. So, took it down a notch.
Maybe
Crusher.
She wants to, like, you know, prevent access or prevent this shipment from going through so that her family has another market they can open up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Perhaps, yeah. My point was, I just felt like it was, like, a bit too much.
All right, while we're discussing this all on the bridge, Picard, as I said, is reluctant to do anything. But Crusher says, well, she can synthesize, like, a less addictive or a non-addictive version. Kind of that will get them over the hump, kind of like naloxone we use for mm-hmm. opioid addiction. Picard says, no, this is not our place to interdict. We have to just, like, you know, let this proceed without our influence because of the Prime Selective Directive. And in the meantime, we get a call from the Onaran minister, from the Pawnee minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he is also kind of in rough shape. And he's saying, like, the whole planet is suffering. We're all going through, he doesn't say withdrawal, but that's essentially what it is.
Right? Yeah. They all think they're dying, which is fair.
Yeah, I mean, very tiny. Like, I drink one or two cups of coffee a day. If I don't have one by 10 o'clock in the morning, I get a headache, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the tiny, you know, tip of the iceberg, right?
For sure.
So Picard, Riker, and Crusher go on to have this conversation about what exactly they're going to do. And while they do that,
before we get to that,
pausing.
Yes. I had a different idea as a radical... self-described libertarian, although everyone mm-hmm. keeps telling me I'm a hippie. It's not true. Why don't they just like lay out the entire situation for the Pawnee citizens and be like, hey, you're addicted to this substance.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. Here are some options. And you know what? If you want to keep partying with the substance and, you know, continue your commerce with Eagleton, that's totally cool. But that's your prerogative, and just let them make their own choice.
So I think because that would violate the natural evolution of the planet, it would be violating the Prime Directive.
Okay, whatever. Violates my constitutional right.
So Picard, Riker, and Crusher leave the bridge to go talk to the Pawnee people. And as they leave, we have this scene where Wes,
which
is still
Dave
on the
loves,
bridge.
This motivated him, you guys, to stay clean, never drink, straight edge, right, Dave?
So, okay, yeah. So Wes turns to Data and is like, Data, I can't understand why people would try to take drugs ever. Don't they know it's bad for them? And oh my God, okay. And then he says this and Tasha chimes in and basically does a just say no to drugs, like very...
After school special and drug
very
use.
Very ham-handed after school special. Yeah. You may feel great then, but later you'll feel bad. Right? That's basically what it is.
Because it was in 87 yeah. and that was like the war of drugs time, right? That's yeah, this is yeah. before I was born, but like I'm pretty sure this is the whole like when Ronald Reagan was like, oh, someone bought cocaine outside the White House or something. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they're freaking out.
And just kicked it all off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so Wes asks Data, why would anyone become voluntarily addicted to a chemical?
Oh, my God.
And I think he also says something ridiculous, like, how does a chemical make you feel good?
Yeah.
Like, if you're supposed to be this wunderkind, like, that's...
pretty stupid.
Yeah, that's a very stupid question.
Well, it also made me angry because, you know, I often drink while we record these episodes. Yes. And it's like, when he asked that, I yeah. just compulsively drank yeah. a ton. And I
oh,
was
that'd
like,
be a
while
fun,
watching the episode.
That'd be a fun
like,
drinking game.
This is why, Wesley. Yeah. Like, your mother's probably addicted to something because you're so goddamn annoying.
That would be amazing. Like, you, it'd be great if in an alternate universe, Tasha Yar'Adua Data was like, you know you're a Sackler kid, right? Yeah. this question.
Yeah. But that's why Wesley's like so against it, because the Sacklers are like, look, kid. The only thing that we Sacklers say is don't get addicted to your own supply.
Yeah.
right? Now go through Starfleet and make a Sacklers proud. It's just like, hey, you know what? If people want to drink after interacting with Wesley to have a little escapism, yeah. that's okay. And Yar, you're not articulating that well. And frankly, Wesley's drug of choice affects all of us. And yeah. his drug of choice is ugly goddamn sweaters. So, I mean, this episode, it's fine. It's the rainbow sweater. Yeah. But other people were forced to look at him in ugly sweaters day in, day out. All right? He's addicted to ugly sweaters. Don't tell me that's not an addiction. And everyone has to cope with it. And that's not cool.
I mean, I guess this whole message is like vintage 80s. Is like you either take drugs once and become addicted forever or you just say no. But like you could just wear a sweater once a week. Right? You don't have to be wearing it all the time. Like there's moderation. You know?
Yeah. There's plenty of things that the message is just freaking terrible. And yes. And also, Yar, just...
Oh, Yar. So, now we flash our attention to the guest quarters, where the Pawnee farmers are staying, right? And we have Crusher, Picard, and Riker go into their quarters to meet with them, while also talking to the Pawnee minister, right? Presumably some government official. Mm-hmm. And the government official is like, dude, this planet is in rough shape. We are not doing well. We need this medicine. And so, after the call, after... to John, after realizing how desperate the situation is on his planet, he charges up them batteries and grabs Riker's tit.
Which made me actually laugh a lot.
Yeah. And this is the second time in as many weeks Riker's been frozen in some energy field, right? Just when he gets his tit grabbed, then he's just like frozen, like, bop!
He's still like recovering from the last episode.
Yeah, it's like twice in a week, man.
And I swear to God, he's basically drunk this entire episode. Yeah. He just contributes nothing and kind of wanders around and he's just like sentient furniture. And then like, yeah, he gets called this person by T'Jon.
Yeah.
T'Jon's like, if you don't do it, I'll kill this person.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you didn't even bother to learn his name.
That's right.
That's how useless you are, Riker.
And Picard is like, I won't be coerced. Like he's like, meh.
And he's got a very meh facial look.
Like, he does, yeah.
No emotion.
Yeah, it's about minute 35 or so. It's pretty hilarious. So Picard, as I said, he said, I won't be coerced. And ultimately, T'Jon releases Riker. And that is the last time we see any of the electricity.
Yeah, so they introduced it early on, and then this is the second time we see it, and that's it.
And that's it.
Right, and... I also had a note that I didn't mention earlier, which was when like Yar and Riker were talking about like, oh no, electrical hands, what do we do?
Yeah.
My first thought was like, can't you duct tape their hands together? Is that a violation of the Prime Directive?
Give them diplomacy mittens.
Seriously though, like what are they going to do? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
So that was my first thought, but I guess that's not an option under the Prime Directive.
Sorry, babe.
does this mess with Riker's heart?
Yeah, he seems like just dazed a little bit after that. Which I don't, I feel like if you're getting tased in the heart, it's probably got some longer lasting consequences. But
and why is everyone standing within tasing distance of electrical hand folk if they know that's a problem?
Yeah.
Like, what? Why are you allowing yourself to be captured by electrical hands in the first place?
Yeah, no, that's a great question.
Yeah, I don't understand, Dave. So many things could have been done. Mostly duct tape and mittens.
I would have loved the diplomacy mittens. Picard goes to go talk to the Eagleton lady. Right. And she asks to speak to him about the situation. And she tells him a new offer, which is, we'll give them the Felicium. We'll give them the drug on credit. They can pay it back whenever. We'll just end the suffering. Yeah. And also, I think the subtext here is, you can go. Right. Like, we got this. Just leave us alone and let us do our drug deal. Right.
And also, look how benevolent we are.
Yeah. There's but that.
Picard's like, ma-ha-ha, a game is afoot.
And at this point, Picard, when they have this conversation with the Eagleton people, he's like, okay, so you know. Mm-hmm. You know that this is addictive and you just want us to like escape, right? And like basically piss off and let you guys do this.
Mm-hmm.
But his hands are tied, right? He can't apparently violate the Prime Directive this week, so he can't do anything to intercede in this case.
And he explains that to Siegfried and Roy. He's just like, yeah, I mean, like, I know because of the Prime Directive. And they're like, well, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, the Prime Directive says I can't actually tell the other people. And they're like, yes. And Crush is just like, no, baby, baby. And Crusher reminds me of like a freaking trust fund baby at like, oh God, do you remember Occupy Wall Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, she'd be the trust fund baby standing on a box with a megaphone. It's like, no, the millionaires are the worst.
Yeah.
Like, it, shut up. Shut up, Sackler dash Crusher.
Well, so I think this was kind of interesting because they do also introduce the possibility that if the Unarans, if the Pawnee people don't get the shipment, they'll go through withdrawal, but they'll basically be okay after that. And then they'll know there's no plague.
Yeah.
So like the kind of jig will be up, right? Mm-hmm. And so these are the consequences. Like Picard could give them the drug and things just continue, or he doesn't, and then the whole scam is over. Ultimately, Picard is like kind of, his hands are tied and he decides not to do anything because of the Prime Directive. He's not going to interfere in their cultures. Right? So now we have, I believe, the final scene coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where Picard and Crusher go to the cargo bay and they tell the Pawnee people, like, you're going to get your medicine, right? Mm-hmm. The Eagletons have agreed to give you this medicine. That's awesome. And the Onarans then, or the Pawnee people, also say, well, what about these coils? Like, our one freighter's exploded. We've got two other freighters.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are malfunctioning. We need that same coil that you gave us to fix the other one that ultimately exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a bit of a twist. Picard's like, no, I'm not going to give you that coil. I'm not going to interfere in either way, right?
Uh-huh.
You're kind of screwed. And so what he, I think, wants to do by refusing to help the Pawnee people is he basically breaks the drug smuggling ring. They can't go pick up the stuff.
Oh, for sure. That's it. Yeah, that's said as much. Like,
yeah.
Oh, but without transportation, then how can anybody do this?
So they're going
to go, us to die.
They're going to go through withdrawal and then they're going to be okay at the end of it. So ultimately, I think he is getting what we want, which is the cycle of addiction to be broken, but he's doing it without violating the Prime Directive.
Oh, no, for sure. But I did have a question at the end of this. Actually, a couple comments and questions. So I forgot until this point that, like, at the beginning, they were hella stupid on their own ship. And they seemed, like, pretty not stupid for most of the episode. So what was that about?
I do think that's because they had just gotten a dose or something like that.
Okay.
That would make sense.
Well, they seemed fine after they got their dose on the ship, like, like energetic and, like, you know, articulate at the very end.
But they were, after the dose, they were just kind of like, yeah. And so that may have been the ambivalence that they had.
But it takes 3 days for the dose to wear off, and that was in the span of 5 minutes.
No, I agree. The timing doesn't add up.
Okay, so that was weird, because everyone was stupid and blasé about dying, and then all of a sudden, everyone cares about dying. And it's like, just pick a lane, writers. Yeah. And then, also, Crusher's advice to them is my favorite. She says, and I quote, you must trust yourselves. And I was like, Crusher, maybe the right thing to say after, you know, Picard said, we're not going to help you with these coils is perhaps you can taper.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe manage your supply.
Yeah.
Something like that. That would ease their suffering as they go through withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
Like taper off of it. Because you don't know when the future is going to hold.
Dilute your doses or something. Yeah.
Something like that. But instead she says, you must trust yourselves. And I'm like, Crusher, what you generally say to your patients after accidentally removing a limb and telling them they have to like grow it back by manifesting it in their brain,
yeah,
that's not going to help these people. It doesn't help your regular patients. What you just said is not going to help these people. They just feel betrayed. Yeah. And yeah, and I also have, is Picard really lecturing us about the Prime Directive, which he's violated a dozen times this season? Like, what the hell?
So we finish this final scene with the Onarans, with the Pawnees. They go back to their planet, and actually the Eagleton people go with them to help negotiate the credit payment, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny because they may not ever get back, right? Because yeah. the freighters are broken. Picard and all them make their way back to the bridge. Mm-hmm. Geordi's been in command of the bridge the whole time, which I think is the second time in a row being command of the bridge. So, yeah. Picard just tells him, like, set a course, Commander, get us out of here. And Geordi's like, well, where do you want to go? And he's like, wherever, just get us out of here. Don't they have, like, orders?
Yeah.
Like, don't they have something else to, like, another
weren't
job?
Weren't they supposed to go back to watching the sun?
Yeah, what happened to the sun? Yeah.
I don't know. That's confusing. And yeah. I mean, like, I know it's not going to happen, but I really, like, was hoping that, like, maybe Wesley gets a space cocaine addiction or something while at Starfleet, trying to keep up his grades.
I was really hoping for more electricity fights. Honestly.
Oh, nice.
That would have been cool. Oh, especially if they somehow got them into a pool.
Yeah. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Right. And then also, I was like, well, we all know that Wesley's going to be a hoot at Starfleet because he'll be the one at the finals parties being like, don't drink. It's addictive. You guys, we can have fun without alcohol. Right.
Have some sweaters. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone loves that guy in college.
Oh, yeah.
Loves him. So fun.
No, Wesley is headed for a lot of friends. So. But that was it. That was the episode. All in all, it wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. It was just kind of ham-fisted writing. And...
Well, Dave, I learned not to do drugs.
That's good.
And because of this episode, I'm going to stop drinking.
Oh, well, I think because of this episode, I might have another Malibu and rum after this.
So. I can see why you would forget and not rewatch this episode.
Yeah.
Mostly, if nothing else, that like that 45 seconds of like, drugs are bad and good.
Oh my God.
Like Mr. Mackey from South Park, like.
Yeah.
Just cringy. It was so bad.
Yeah. But the next episode, I remember very well.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 23, Skin of Evil.
Ooh, so Skin
we'll
of
see
Evil.
That one next week.
Is that some sort of euphemism for drug addiction too?
It is not.
Okay. So I feel like it's of note that it's like, it wasn't symbiosis. It was parasitic.
Oh, for sure.
The relationship.
Yeah.
Bom, bom, bom. Yeah. And I also thought that like the ending was good in the sense that, well, first off, I would not want to be on a planet where everyone's going through withdrawal at once.
That sounds unpleasant.
That sounds like hell. And Siegfried and Roy, good luck. I thought the whole like not giving the coil thing was because there was the lack of motivation to really create. Like that was kind of an undercurrent theme, like because they got so addicted to this relaxing drug.
Oh.
You know, kind of like a Brave New World Soma type thing where it's just like, you know, everyone's lazy and calm and there's no need to be inventive or step out of line or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like if they're off the drug, they'll continue with the progress they were making before the plague happened.
Yeah, that's a great point. I guess I hadn't thought about it that way, but yeah, Picard may be like counting on them.
That's exactly what I thought he was doing.
Yeah, I assumed it was just normal. Like, I want you to, you know, work hard to get this, but it could very well be now that you're not high all the bloody time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
Well, especially if they were trying to establish earlier in the episode that it does somehow dampen their like intellectual capabilities.
Or just their motivation or whatever. And
right.
They were already doing really well before this plague. So
exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh yeah.
So I liked that part. I was like, oh, okay. That's like some tough love. And I feel like Picard could have been a bit more explicit, but meh.
Prime Directive.
Also, Dave, trust in yourself. I really would love to see someone like go to an addiction counselor and that's the only advice they dispense.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a doctor. Trust in yourself to get off opiates.
I think that's how I got here, is trusting my own decisions. Like,
thanks, Dr. Crusher.
Yeah.
Dr. Crusher saves you from drugs.
Okay.
Paid for by the Sackler Organization for Drug Addiction.
So that's it. Episode 22, mm-hmm. Symbiosis. But next week, as I said, episode 23, Skin of Evil. So we just want to thank you again, everyone, for listening to us this week. And, you know, if you enjoy this, please like and subscribe. I hate saying
that. Say it the annoying way, Dave.
Like and subscribe.
Okay, that's pretty good.
All right. This hurts my soul every time.
Smash that subscribe button, bros.
Oh, my God. We have seen an uptick in our subscribers, so we do really appreciate y'all doing that. We have a lot of fun doing this podcast, and we really appreciate the feedback and the love and all that kind of stuff.
But we have to shell out for season 2. soon. Oh, you guys, yeah. It's $25.
Oh, you have to buy the next thing on iTunes season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, have a great week, y'all. Hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you next week.
And for other information, visit www.start-trek.com. I'm not saying do drugs, but do what you want safely.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper, and also enjoy your individualism and being an adult.
Everything in moderation.
Don't let Wesley's judgmental attitude prevent you from being you.
Nice.
Trust in yourself. All right.
Nice ending.
Thanks.
Way to land that plane.
Bye, guys.
Bye.